Who will take over for Dan Quinn if he's fired mid-season? And what will it take for Arthur Blank to do that? And is it all a moot point if the Falcons can beat Aaron Donald, Todd Gurley, and the rest of the Rams this Sunday? All of that is next with Gina Thomas and me, David Walker, on this week's Falcoholic Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Podcast, the official podcast of the Atlanta Falcons on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I am DW, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the Joom, the Peddler of Dogs, first of her name, the Quick Draw McGraw Facebook Messenger, the Amphibian Samaritan, the Trash Talker Supreme, the one and only Touchdown Balls, she who will not be bossed, Gina Mad Online Thomas. Gina, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, David. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm great. I've missed doing the pod with you. I know we've had some rough weeks here, and we're in the midst of one, but we're gonna have a good time talking about the Falcons.
Buddy, I've got some hard seltzers. I'm ready to go.
We are on brand. And
5% ABV, my friends.
Under normal circumstances, on normal podcasts, we would have some guests. We ended up with some scheduling snafus that fall in my court. I apologize for that. So Jan and I are going to talk a little bit about the Rams game coming up. And in the second half of the podcast, we're going to talk about where this team is headed, some projections about what we think may happen over the next few weeks, and where this season may end up. I know a lot of you on Twitter at the site have been speculating about Coach Dan Quinn, what will happen with him, who may take over the team. And we're going to discuss that on the podcast in the second half after we preview this upcoming Rams game. So Gina, obviously the Falcons are coming back home. They are 1-5, certainly not where we thought the team would be. The offense has played well the last 2 weeks. The defense arguably has hit, well, I'd say hit rock bottom, but I don't know that we've found the bottom yet. Because we are going up against the Sean McVay Rams. And the first thing I think we should acknowledge is a big thank you to the Rams for knocking the Saints out of the playoffs last year.
Yeah, that actually was great for me personally in two ways. Because one, as you know, my brand is to mock the Saints mercilessly. And they gave me pretty much endless ammo, the way that they knocked them out. Yeah. And so I do thanks for that. And then two, one of the greatest experiences of my professional life was getting to cover the Rams in the Super Bowl this past year in Atlanta. And so they've got a lot of really good guys on that team. I really enjoyed covering them. Genuinely enjoyed getting to talk to guys like Aaron Donald, and you know, just it was a great experience. So this is a team that I think that they're going to light the Falcons up, because we've all seen the Falcons play this year. But I got to say, I'm not going to be too mad about it for those two reasons.
Yeah. And it's a team that has some Atlanta connections. The GM, Les Snead, used to work here with the Falcons under Thomas Dimitroff. And of course, Sean McVay went to a local Atlanta high school. So he has a direct Atlanta connection. So pretty cool.
And then Todd Gurley, I don't know if you're aware, he played at the University of Georgia. You may have heard he was best player available in 2004. The Falcons went with Vic Beasley, but you know, without a Bulldog on the roster. I know that that's still a sore point. I really should not be needling our fans.
No, you should.
Not with the way that Atlanta sports are going. Please know that I do this as a coping mechanism so that I can get through it.
Oh, absolutely. So the Rams come into this game with some really, really interesting trades that happened this week. In fact, the trades were inconvenient to me, because I wrote my normal series of the Falcons offense versus the upcoming defense. I wrote it ahead of time, knowing that I would have a busy schedule. I had to make two edits because they traded away earlier in the week, traded away Marcus Peters, who was their number one corner, who is, you know, one of the best ball hawks, I think, in the NFL since he's come into the league. And then immediately turned around and dealt away two first round draft picks to the Jaguars to sign and bring in Jalen Ramsey, which was quite the move to get rid of Marcus Peters, but then turn around and get Jalen Ramsey in the door. So I think there was this brief moment where people are like, hey, the Rams don't have Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib, and everyone was sort of like celebrating. We're going to pass on them. And then they signed Jalen Ramsey.
Well, Ramsey is just, I mean, he's one of my favorite non-Falcons players in the league. One, because of the attitude that he plays with. I just think that he's hilarious. He says whatever he wants. He doesn't care. As a rookie, he's calling out Aaron Rodgers. Like, I love that swagger. And yeah, I mean, he's a great addition, and I bet that he will have a very good game against the Falcons.
Yeah, I think you would be hard pressed to find a corner in the league that many people would say is better than Jalen Ramsey. He's easily top three, and I think on many, many lists, he would be the number one corner in the league. So,
are you saying he's better than Isaiah Oliver?
I'm saying he's a little bit better. A little bit. we're not going to touch that one. But so Jalen Ramsey comes in. He is obviously going to make that secondary pretty stout. And I don't know, Gina, if you've heard of this player named Aaron Donald, who is in the middle of their defensive line, but some people tell me that this guy's actually fairly decent. What's your take on Aaron Donald?
You know, my take on him is that he is a generational talent. I think he is arguably the best player, not the best defensive tackle, but the player. Best player in the football league. He is a transcendent talent. The one thing that I would like to say about Aaron Donald is that murder is wrong. So murder Matt Ryan on Sunday, okay? Don't make me dislike you, Aaron Donald. I love to watch him play, but yeah, I fear for our quarterback's life, and I'm not even joking. Like, I am legitimately concerned about this between Donald and whatever the Falcons offensive line is going to look like this Sunday.
Yeah. And I think the last time we played the Rams, and I should point out, you know, to be fair to the Falcons, that they've had pretty good success against the Rams in recent years. They beat them in the playoffs in 2017. They beat them during the season in 2016. So they've been pretty good against the Sean McVay led Rams. I do think this year is clearly different. But one thing that stood out to me, at least in the 2017 playoff game, was Aaron Donald looked like he was a running back for the Falcons because he was in our backfield so often. He is that good. And I think anyone who looks at the numbers and says, oh, his sack totals are down, he's not having a good season, you aren't watching Aaron Donald if you're looking at the numbers. Yeah. This man is still as dominant as he has been.
His disruption doesn't necessarily show up in the stat sheet, but he is disruptive on almost every play. I mean, Grady Jarrett actually has kind of a similar situation with the stat sheet. You don't always see his impact in black and white and writing after the game, but you do see it on the field of play. He is very disruptive, and Donald is that like times a million. Yeah. He just is a very special player. And my biggest concern right now is the fact that, Alex Mack is great. He has been an exceptional center for his entire career. He has anchored this line, and he has really done an admirable job for the most part, even this season when he's had instability on either side of him. But going into this week, you know, we had James Carpenter downgraded on Thursday from limited participation in practice to out. And so that means that we're likely looking at, you know, that's just not an encouraging development on a Thursday, which is when we're recording. We'll see what happens tomorrow. But if that stands, then we're looking at Jamone Brown and Wes Schweitzer at those guard positions. And holy shit, I don't know about you, but the thought of Aaron Donald going up against Wes Schweitzer makes me want to forget that I ever liked football and never watched it again. That is a horrifying prospect.
Yeah.
You gotta be honest. I'm not looking forward to that.
No. And in my show notes that we put together before we prepare the podcast, I actually had a note about what he may do against Alex Mack, Carpenter, and Brown, not even realizing at the time that Carpenter was getting downgraded. So obviously just terrible news against the absolute best player in the NFL. And like you said, not the best defensive tackle, not the best defensive player, the best player, period, at any position. It doesn't matter. Yeah. So, and the interesting thing, you mentioned this name earlier, and it's Todd Gurley. He is a player that if you are someone that plays fantasy football, and you bought into Gurley early, you may be very upset with how his season has been going. Clearly he has, you know, been battling some injuries. He's got the arthritis issues that I think are well publicized at this point. I feel like, Gina, his bounce back game is going to be Sunday. I just don't have a lot of hope. But what's your take on Todd Gurley? What do you think he's going to do against the Falcons defense front?
Well, my take on the Falcons defense is that this is a get right team. And by get right, I don't mean that they're getting right. I mean that whoever is playing against them is getting right. Gurley last week, when you're talking about people who, you know, thought Gurley was a good option for fantasy, I feel personally attacked because that was me and in two leagues. And so I will say last week Gurley was out. Right. I think he maybe needs a week of rest. I think that, you know, McVay just needs to get over it. We all know that you've got him on a pitch count. Like we all yeah. know. Everybody knows that if you have one of the best running backs in the National Football League and you're barely using him, there is a reason. But, you know, for Gurley's sake and for the sake of those two fantasy teams, I'm hoping that that rest is enough for him to come out and be productive. Just maybe not this week, except that I've seen this defense play. And so I do feel like we can, you know, running for 475 yards.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, frankly, if I would start anybody who is playing against this Falcons defense.
So my new DFS strategy, I don't know if you know, or if our listeners are aware, but I'm pretty into DraftKings. I usually do a league every week. You can follow me on Twitter and get in on that action. If you're interested, just let me know. But anyway, my strategy lately is to start the quarterback and at least one wide receiver, running back, or tight end from the Falcons opponent. And I have won money almost every week. And like, I'm horrified by that, but at the same time, I like money and I like winning, and so it's not a bad strategy.
No, it's I can't argue against it. One last matchup I want to talk about, and this is one I think that maybe, you know, many Falcons fans should be mindful of, because it's arguably the one that I think the Rams have a huge advantage with, and that's their wide receivers against our secondary. You know, I think Jared Goff is a known quantity for the most part. And I think if we're going to slow him down, Grady Jarrett is going to be, because it's going to have to be Grady Jarrett times two. But what we're looking at, the Rams receivers, you've got, you know, Robert Woods, who is, I think, a fairly good receiver. You've got Brandon Cooks, who is, I think, arguably one of the fastest receivers in the league.
He is, and he's Sean McVay's guy. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
And then you've got Cooper Kupp, who is arguably one of the better slot receivers in the league. This is a really, really good trio of receivers. Not to mention, you know, they've got Everett, they've got Higbee at tight end. I argued in an article that's going to land this week that the Rams may have a better arsenal of offensive weapons in total than even the Falcons do. And that's saying a lot. And they're going up against Isaiah Oliver, Kendall Sheffield, because Desmond Trufant is probably not going to be playing in this game, and DeMonte KZ, and Ricardo Allen and Kamal Ishmael on the back end. How do you feel about this matchup?
You know, I've had a lot of these Rams players on various fantasy teams, and I can tell you guys like Woods, guys like Kupp, guys like Brandon Cooks, they're all boom or bust.
Yep.
But the Falcons defense provides an opportunity for every offense to have a boom. And so that's my concern. I feel like Sheffield played really well last week. You know, for the most part, I only noticed him when he was making decent plays, and that's a good thing for a rookie cornerback. So I was really actually pleased with Sheffield's play. But in the grand scheme, this is a really unfortunate matchup for our defense. I mean, they really do have, I wouldn't say that they have like the caliber of talent that the Falcons have, because Austin Hooper has really emerged as one of the better tight ends in the league. And Holy is the best wide receiver in the league. that's not even a discussion now with Antonio Brown sitting at home. And so Falcons do have top caliber talent, but as far as, you know, having depth of talent, I think that the Rams are in a stronger position. And so, yeah, I think that this is one that, and of course, now that I'm saying all of this out loud, the Falcons will probably make me look like an idiot now. But I'll take it. I mean, I feel like either I'm right or the Falcons play well. So I win either way.
Yeah. And the last thing I want to point out, and I really have no idea what to make of this. The Rams right now have a struggling offensive line. They're not playing particularly well. A lot of people are saying if you want to look at the Rams' offensive struggle, it really starts in the middle. It starts with the you know, their center and their guards. They're not playing at a very high level. And that sort of is an area where you would think Grady Jarrett could have an impact on this game. And I think in particular with Jared Goff, who is not the mobile quarterback that a Kyler Murray is, that you know, some of the other guys we faced, a Marcus Mariota who got benched, you know, those guys that Goff is more stable in the pocket. So do you think that maybe this is a game where the Falcons defensive line finally wakes up from their slumber and maybe takes advantage of offensive line, or do you think that's wishful thinking?
So one of the issues with the Rams offensive line is that Roger Saffold, who had been the longest tenured player with the Rams, he left in free agency and landed with the Titans. And so that does create instability in the center. And one of the issues with Goff is that he struggles to read defenses. Before anybody gets their hopes up, the Falcons defense is basically like the damn ABCs. And so I don't think that Goff is going to have as much of a challenge with this defense. I feel so bad. I really do love this team. They just have hurt me so many times.
It's not a healthy relationship, if we're being honest.
It's not a healthy relationship. I do think that that is one of the issues with Goff, and I think that that's part of the reason that he doesn't react to plays as quickly. I think it's because he struggles to read defenses. I don't think that he will have as much trouble with this Falcons defense. We have all seen it all season. You know, they throw this cover three out here and it's like, you know, soft zone and it's very easy to pick apart. I mean, it's just not, it doesn't present much of a challenge. So I hope that because Goff does have those weaknesses and because they do have that softness in the center of their line, I am a Grady Jarrett. I have complete faith in that he will put everything out there on Sunday and he will do his best to disrupt Goff's game. And I think that he will succeed a decent amount of the time. I just don't know that it will be enough is, I guess, the best way to explain it.
Yeah, we're going to need guys like Claiborne, McKinley, Beasley to show up as well. And the last 3 weeks, they haven't. So arguably, I think the last time these guys showed up was against the Eagles in week two. So we need more of that and less of what we saw the past 3 weeks. Whether that happens or not, I think remains to be seen. So with that, predictions. I know where I'm leaning, having looked at, you know, these two rosters and how they match up. And I think the matchups are really the key here. How do you think this one's going to play out on Sunday?
I think that it's going to be close enough to really piss me off. I think that it will be a high scoring game because we've seen what the Falcons offense can do. I mean, the fact that they've put up 30 plus points the past 2 weeks and can't win those games because the defense, that is deeply, deeply troubling. I think that we see another 30 plus point performance from them this week at home. So I'm thinking it's going to be somewhere in the ballpark of, you know, well, now I've got to do football math in my head. You know, Rams 41, Falcons 38. Like, it'll be something completely ridiculous like that.
Yeah. I'm with you. I can't remember a time where I've predicted Falcons losses in multiple weeks, and yet that's where I'm at. I think it's going to be something akin to, like, last week where – it'll be a doink, you know, from like Matt Bryant, and fans are going to blame him for that game. And I'm going to reiterate this because this sort of got on my nerves. When your offense scores 33 points and your kicker misses the field goal, the loss is not solely on him. If you still lose, you should not be giving up over 30 points per game.
a lot on every guy who played, every guy who team prepared, and it is 100% on the coaching staff too.
Yes.
So
bar none.
Everybody blame that was not Matt Bryant's fault.
No. So I think it'll end like 35-33 Rams with the Falcons failing to convert a 2-point conversion because someone fumbles it out of the back of the end zone or something. Something random that will just piss us all off and remind us that the Falcons always find new ways to crush our hearts and our souls.
There's one universal truth about the Atlanta Falcons. That's it right there.
So if the Falcons lose, that will take them to 1-6 with one game remaining before the bye week. I want to talk about what that could potentially mean for this coaching staff for the remainder of the season and even going into the following year, into 2020. But before we have that conversation, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back on the Falcoholics podcast. This is David Walker, DW, back with you with my co-host, Gina Thomas. And we are talking about the Falcons 2019 season, where this thing is going to play out. Gina, I have gone on the record, both on radio, on our podcasts, in our articles. I have said, I think, consistently for the past several weeks, I think the only way Arthur Blank moves on from Dan Quinn before the end of the season is if the Falcons go into the bye week. Their bye week is week 9, so it's a perfect split. 8 games before, 8 games after. I said the only way he would fire him at the midpoint of the season would be if he goes into the bye week at 1-7. Right now, they're 1-5. They face the Rams at home, and they turn around. And how is this for irony if it's the game that decides his fate? He will play the Seahawks right before the bye week, the team that arguably got him this job to begin with, the team he came from. So we both predicted the Rams loss. I think you could look at the Seahawks and very easily think, yeah, that could be another loss. So I want to get your take, because we've talked about this before, and Arthur Blank's hesitance in the past to fire coaches midseason, I still think there's an element of that there. I think you have some insight into that. So give me your thoughts, what you think of my sort of prediction that 1-7 is the breaking point, where you think this may fall out. Will Dan Quinn be a casualty at the bye week? How does this flesh out in your mind?
So I think that there are multiple things at play here. And I would say that chief among them is the fact that Arthur Blank has recently experienced winning a championship with Atlanta United. They just won in December, and they've won other trophies since then. Like, I don't really follow soccer because I only have so much bandwidth for pro sports, and the ones that I do like really crush my spirit on a regular basis. I'm a Falcons, Braves, and Cavs fan, so please pray for me. Thank you. But I do think that in the past, I think that Blank understands that it's very disruptive to fire a coach midseason, and we have seen specific examples where he's reticent about that. You know, Jim Mora flat out said he wanted to be a college coach. Blank kept him around till the end of the season. You know, Jerry Glanville, I think it was, he only fired him because Glanville is like, look, if you're going to fire me, just do it now. And then, of course, we all remember 2007? Yeah, that Bobby Petrino left, snuck out of town in the middle of the night and all that kind of bullshit. And so that was obviously very painful for the players and all that kind of stuff. So I also think that everybody likes Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn is a genuinely good person. I have a lot of respect for him, and I like him a whole lot. Here's the thing, though. I think that now that Blank knows what it feels like to see a team that he owns actually win at all, I think that he wants more of that. And I think he sees the money that he is pumping into this team. Yep. And he is not getting, you know, the closest he's gotten is the most absurd collapse in a Super Bowl ever in the history of the NFL. Like, that's the closest that he has come. Previously, it was, you know, Eugene Robinson getting busted for solicitation and then losing in spectacular fashion. And so I think that has kind of, I think it's lit a fire under Blank to, you know, maybe make some harder decisions. I also think, and this is speaking to your point about if they go into the bye week with just one win, I don't know how you look at this as somebody who likes and respects Dan Quinn a great deal. I don't know how you don't want to put him out of his misery, because at that point, it's obvious that he's not going to turn it around. And so what you're asking him to do is basically jeopardize his future, jeopardize his ability to get jobs in the future. If he continues trotting out this kind of performance every week, you know, I don't want Dan Quinn to be unemployed forever. I think that he has the potential to be a great coach. It's just he's not getting through to these players. Sometimes players just need a different voice. And I think that that's maybe where we are with this team. But Dan Quinn is a good person with the right ideas. What he did in Atlanta worked for a while. I think that he is somebody who can learn from this experience and grow as a coach from it. Continue to make him, you know, slog through this shit show of a season. He's jeopardizing his future, his future as a coach. And so I think at some point too, you have to do, I mean, like, I sound like I'm talking about, you know, dealing with an aging pet or something, but you know, at some point you have to think realistically about, I just felt so sad. Oh, this is just awful. I really hate talking about someone's career and their future like this. And I hope that I'm not coming across as callous, but I really think that at some point you have to weigh, like, it's clear that this is not the best thing for the team. And I think it's becoming clear that this situation is not what's best for Quinn either. And so then I think that a real leader has to make some difficult decisions. And I think that that difficult decision, yeah, it's going to be hard and it's going to suck for everybody at the time. But I think in the long run, it's what's best for everybody.
Yeah. And do you think that it's going to take a 1-7 or maybe even a 2-6 record? Or let me restate it this way. Do you think if Quinn wins the next two games and gets the team to 3-5 at the bye, so a win against the Rams followed by a win against the Seahawks, do you think that will stay the execution until the end of the year?
Yeah, and I think that it should. Because if he's able to pull off wins against two teams that should be contenders for playoff spots in the NFC, I think that he should get a shot to keep it going. Yeah. If the team responds, if they improve, if they respond, and if they're able to beat those two teams, then I think I have to reevaluate my position that Dan Quinn's not getting through to these players.
Yeah.
And I think Blank should too. So yeah, I think that, and I know that there's a segment of our readers who are not going to like that I said that, but that is my honest assessment. Yes, I think that if they can get wins, and especially if the offense can keep performing like it has, because all the defense needs to do is be adequate. And you, I mean, you must be so tired of me saying that.
I think we've said it for like 5 years.
Yes, since we have been doing this podcast, I have said those words a million times. All Matt Ryan needs is an adequate defense. And if Dan Quinn can get this motley crew to play adequate defense, then yeah. I mean, I think that this offense, the sky is the limit, and they have played the past 2 weeks in ways that should have won them games. It was completely on the defense that they didn't win those. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that if they're able to eke out wins against the Seahawks and the Rams over the next 2 weeks, then yeah, I think that Dan Quinn probably will get to the end of the season. Yeah.
And I completely agree. And I think for the exact same reasons. Plus, just from a pure mathematics standpoint, 3-5, in theory, you could finish 11-5. Now, will they finish 11-5? I mean, that's you're talking about them winning, 10 straight games, which seems like a stretch for the way that they've performed up to this point. But then again, you know, this is the one thing I guess I love about the NFL is that you do see random sort of out of the blue things like this happen where teams get hot in the most craziest of times and make playoff runs that no one expected. And right. I think that if you go into the bye and you are not statistically out of it, yeah, I think you have to say, okay, 3-5, yeah, you give them to the end of the year and you get, and one thing I want to repeat to fans, cause I know there's a ton of recency bias. We were in the playoffs in 2017. Okay. And that was after we went to the Super Bowl in 2016. And I know there are a lot of fans out there who interact with us on the site and on Twitter who say, but it was the worst collapse in NFL history. And I get that, understand it, but he still got us to the Super Bowl. that does count for something. And he got us there in a fashion where we blew through the playoffs. We crushed Green Bay. We blew out the Seahawks. And in 2017, people forget, we won a playoff game there and came darn near close to beating the Eagles in their house.
The last play.
Right.
It came down to the last play against the Eagles in the divisional round. And so, yeah, I mean, I think, and you're exactly right, you know, that was less than 2 years ago that that last game happened. And last year, they did have catastrophic injuries. Yep. I mean, I don't know many teams who could lose both starting guards, both starting safeties. Everybody, I mean, Devontae Freeman,
Deion Jones,
you know, the list got, Grady was out some, Tack was out some, you know, it was a complete disaster. And so, yeah, I think that those are definitely extenuating circumstances. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, they still have the talent. The offense has been performing well. All the defense has to do is be adequate. Have we seen anything that suggests that they can? LOL, no. But who knows? Sunday is a new day.
Sunday is always a new day. So, all right. Let's go into this next part of conversation, because I think a lot of fans are at the point where they're assuming they're not going to win any more games. I've literally seen people predicting 1-15 record, which would be
I'm one of those people.
Yeah, I mean, the way they've played, I don't think I can blame anyone for predicting that, because they've got all the division games coming up after the bye.
Kendall Jackson, he used to write for the Falcoholic. He's a friend of the site, friend of the show, friend of ours personally. Kendall tweeted, you know, looking at the Falcons' schedule for the rest of the year, you know, you got to bet your life on one of these games that the Falcons are going to win. And I replied to him and I said, no, thank you, Kenny. I like being alive. I just don't see where a win is coming from. Yeah. But, you know, they will win another game any given Sunday and all that. But I mean, it's just, I don't fault anybody for being skeptical that they're going to be able to.
So along those lines, let's say you and I are correct. Falcons go into the bye at 1-7. Arthur Blank mercy kills Dan Quinn's career in Atlanta, takes him out of his misery and our misery. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think to your point, he will need to do that for the players as well, and to shake it up just to make them feel like, okay, you're not going to have to go the next 8 games suffering like this. The one question I'm kind of surprised by, because I thought it was a no-brainer, but maybe it's not, is, you know, a lot of fans are asking, well, who would take over the team? And I think, you know, you and I and the rest of the writers, Dave and several others have discussed this. We all sort of agree on some of the names. You know, I think, first let's put it out there. Who do you think would take over as head coach, the interim head coach for the final 8 games for the Falcons?
I think the most likely candidate is Dirk Koetter. And I frankly think that that's probably part of the reason they brought him back as an insurance policy in case Dan needed to go midseason. He's somebody who can step in, and he's got head coaching experience with the Bucks, granted, but, you know, he does have head coaching experience. Mularkey does too, and Mularkey could shift into the offensive coordinator role.
Right.
And that would be ideal. I would prefer to not have an interim head coach splitting his focus between offensive coordinating and head coaching. And then, you know, I would say that defensively, I would probably look to Jeff Ulbrich, the linebackers coach. I really like him. I think that he is somebody who has the respect of his players, who's very committed to his players. I think that he's an intelligent guy. You know, Raheem Morris is another guy who could step in as offensive leader. And I think that Raheem would, I like his perspective as somebody who has been a head coach in the past. And also, obviously, I mean, he was, I think, a safety, if I'm remembering correctly.
So.
He was and so he has the experience of playing defense. He understands the passing game offensively from a defender's perspective, which I think has been beneficial to our wide receivers. So he's another name that I would keep an eye on for that. But I would say definitely Koetter as head coach. And then, you know, I laid out the coordinator ideas. I would actually probably prefer Raheem over Mularkey.
Yeah.
Let Mularkey stay with since Austin Hooper is ripping shit up this year. I love everything I'm seeing from him. So whatever's going on there, keep doing it.
One of the few bright spots of the season at this point. No, I agree. I think Dirk Koetter is the most likely because he has recent head coaching experience. You know, he was coaching just last year with the Bucks, as you mentioned. I do think there's a distant shot that Malarkey could take the position. It feels like he would be jumping ahead of Cutter, so I don't know that that makes a lot of sense. I feel like, you know, you look towards the coordinators usually to step up into that head coaching role. And of course, since the defensive coordinator is going to be gone because it's Dan Quinn, I think the most likely choice from a hierarchy standpoint becomes Cutter, because you don't want to offend any of your remaining coaches and cause some sort of weird mass exodus. I am, and actually you mentioned it, the name I'm most interested in to see what they do with him is Raheem Morris, because he is someone that within the, you know, Falcons organization over the past several years, they have moved him around a lot. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jen, I believe he started on the defensive side of the ball. Then they moved him over to be wide receivers coach after Rubisky left the team. And then
passing is his technical. Yeah. Passing game passing coordinator game is his technical. Right. He was actually an assistant head coach and the defensive backs coach in 2015. Then he moved over as he's an assistant head coach and wide receivers coach.
Yep. So they like him. They think that he's very capable, of understanding both sides of the ball. I'm curious to see what they do with him. And I'm with you. I would be very interested to see if they let him get a shot at offensive coordinator. Because let's be honest, we know what Mike Malarkey can do as an offensive coordinator. We saw it for 3 years, through 4 years, 2008 through 2011. We know.
Well, and God bless
what's that?
We also watched him be the God bless us, because we also watched him be the coach of the Tennessee Titans.
Right. Exotic scratch.
So, yeah, I think that we know what we're getting with Malarkey, and we don't necessarily like it.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say we really hate it. But yeah. when he left here in 2011, you didn't see many wet eyes around Atlanta when he departed for Jacksonville. So I think there were a lot of people that helped him pack his bags.
Unless they were damp from laughing, they were not. Nobody was sad.
So I'm actually really curious to see what would happen with Raheem, because I think within the organization, at least, and maybe this is a factor with Dan Quinn and I'm reading too much into it. But Raheem was, a head coach, a very young head coach many years ago. He's got a good reputation within the organization. I'll be curious to see if he gets elevated to the offensive coordinator, because I would be curious as a Falcons fan to see if he could do something different, maybe offer something. And you know, you've got to imagine that if the Falcons are 1-7, these coaches are all probably realizing that they are on a limited time. They've got 8 games, and if anything, they're going to want to audition not only to Arthur Blank to potentially stay with the team, but to the rest of the NFL.
31 other teams. And one of the things that, and I mean, this is just a very theoretical perspective, but one of the things that I do like about Raheem Morris is that he does have that experience now on both sides of the ball. Yeah. Obviously, he had coaching experience before he had this experience of being the Falcons, you know, passing game coordinator and assistant head coach on the offensive side of the ball. I really think that broader experience should make him a more well-rounded coach. And so I'm very interested in what he could do genuinely. Like, if he doesn't get the offensive coordinator role or whatever, you know, whatever happens with Atlanta, I am excited to see what he does next regardless, because I think that this experience has to have been really valuable for him.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I like Raheem. I think he's still got a bright future in this league. And yeah, if it comes down to it, I think
I made fun of him a lot when he was with the Bucks. But to be fair, it's because I hate the Bucks, and so it's really personal. I like Raheem Morris a lot. He is a good guy. He's very, very smart, and like I said, I'm really impressed with how he's stepped in on the offensive side of the ball and been able to really hold his own. He obviously has a lot of talent to work with, but I mean, you can't really argue with the results in general. So
yeah, absolutely. So with that, I think we have come to the end of yet another podcast. You won't believe this, but we are over 100 episodes that we've done between this, the post game, and the Crossfire podcast. So we have hit a milestone with the Falcoholic podcast since you and I relaunched it a few years ago. So I'm very excited about that. We'll celebrate later with some drinks, clearly. So Gina, why don't you remind our listeners where they can find you and what you've got going on?
You can find me at The Falcoholic, where I am doing important journalism like our staff picks and, you know, other things as they come up. Twitter at Gina Thomas. And if you like pictures of my dog, you should definitely check that out. And you can find me on Fox 5 here in Atlanta on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. on Thursday Night Kickoff. This week, we talked about how Falcons fans are coping with this horrible loss. And I'm sure that when David has a chance to pull the video for me, I will tweet it and also share it on the site. So absolutely, that will be great.
And I'll take that as a reminder. As for me, guys, you can find me on Twitter at FalcoholicDW, here weekly on the Postgame Podcast. And of course, the podcast here with Gina, and my articles at thefalcoholic.com. So for Gina, Matt Online Thomas, this is David Walker. Thank you guys for listening in. And thank you, especially for listening to us over the past 100 episodes. We really, really, truly and deeply appreciate it. Thanks, guys. We'll talk with you next time.